to Big Red Couch, a podcast about making role-playing games. A group of GMs and players draw ideas from the mystery box and bring their game pitches to you. In which our heroes draw a card.
Good day, listener, and welcome to the drawing for episode 27 of the Big Red Couch.
Woo!
The mystery box has been thoroughly kicked, so I'll draw a card.
Still, it's a bit of a whimperings.
And upon the card is novel genre crossover, possibly accidental.
Okay.
Were
I can't help but feel partially responsible.
It is written in your handwriting.
That proves nothing.
It's kind of like getting a board game card out and it's blank, that one.
Maybe we'll take that as like a open call.
It does appear to be the fill in your own question card.
Well, this thing is crossover, I suppose, so...
Gives you the right to cross over things that don't normally get crossed over, so, yeah.
Yeah, it was a... I can remember what the gist behind that was. However, by saying it, I will completely hull my actual thoughts for the episode, and I'm not giving any of you guys a satisfaction.
Fair enough.
Let's see what we come up with.
Okay. Expect knife fights and... harsh language next time.
We'll see you soon.
Some days later.
So, should we have a show then?
No!
Okay.
Alright. What's the semaphore?
I'm just doing yay and excitable and
fair enough.
Getting the blood pumping and...
I did like the fact that Kevin managed to forget his own name on state fair.
Yeah.
That was a bit awesome, the fact that you left that in. And Craig, what? Where? Fuck!
Well, I thought that my shame in this case was entertaining to other people, and so I left it in.
Whatever's right.
Of course, by the time anyone hears this episode, State Fair will be old news. That's kind of funny, too.
Yeah. Consequences of our buffer. Yeah.
But it does mean that in the decades to come, as people comb over the Big Red Couch with the same amount of detail as they have the works of Conan Doyle and other people, that this will be a valuable clue in figuring out exactly when things were placed
and what was happening in the lives actually of the podcasters.
Yes, the pop culture archaeology will find this quite a useful episode.
That's true. Mm. Yeah.
Anyway. Welcome, audience, to episode 27 of The Big Red Couch, entitled Novel Genre Crossover, Possibly Accidental. On the couches today, we have...
Craig.
Kev.
And
I got
Tonya.
It right this time.
Yes, you did. Well done.
Pat my head.
You got your name right. Come on, bro.
Yep, done.
Yeah. Kevin got his name right. You still don't know who I am because Kevin was busy talking about how right he was. Anyway.
Sorry. Who are you again?
I'm still Tonya.
There we go. Fixed.
So.
We are so goddamn mature.
We are. Novel genre crossover, possibly accidental. I have to admit that is in my handwriting.
We haven't got attribution from any of the other people whose fault it could be.
Which means it probably came off our initial idea generating thread.
The brain spew thread.
Yeah. So it could be anybody. But was copied down by Craig, so we're going to blame him anyway.
Fair enough. Well, because I have a vague idea as to what that one was about.
Oh, yeah.
What my original idea was. Mm. And so I'm going to use it, because I have a vague idea, and that's all I've got, and I'm clinging to it for grim death.
Well, go on then.
Oh. Sure, nobody else wants to go? For the purposes of future generations, Tonya is giving me a look. It's like a look, except rather more pointed.
You basically volunteered.
I did. Okay. Novel genre crossover. Possibly accidental. I decided to go meta with this one. So, in this case, this is not novel in the context of new. This is novel in the context of literature. It is characters in a novel discovering that they have inadvertently, accidentally, wandered into a different novel genre. It's Sam Spade... Or, actually, something will be vastly more hilarious, so I'll take that one back. It's Miss Marple finding herself in, if we're going to stick to something roughly in the same geographical genre region, finding herself in a noirish story, or finding herself in something steampunky,
mm-hmm.
or finding herself in My Little Pony fanfic.
Okay. This actually sounds quite close to what I came up with. Except I came up with it. I came up with it from the point of view of how to get players involved. Mm. What I was thinking was you get players to write down the last five books that they read and make up characters from those books. And they're going to be, over the course of the game, going through all of the books, as opposed to just the ones that characters come from.
I was imagining something, now that I think of it, which is almost a cheesy rip-off of Sliders.
Yeah, pretty much.
Where you have a bunch of characters from, either from the one book, or from a bunch of different books, trying to make their way home to their own literary universe. So I'm just imagining the sort of the trench coat-wearing detective, the somewhat but not very humaniform, brightly coloured horse.
I was imagining Sam Spade surrounded by characters from Wind in the Willows and attempting to get directions from Badger.
I'm just imagining these people sort of peering out from behind a wall. Sort of, what have we got? Okay, clothing looks a bit Victorian. Oh, hang on a sec, we've got somebody riding a motorised unicycle. Got some zeppelins. It's starting to look a bit steampunky here. That could be a prop. Hang on a sec. I recognise that one. I think we're in that Morrison Ballantyne series. We could be okay here.
It's kind of reminding me of the Jasper Ford Thursday Next books, you've heard of those.
I have heard of, but have never read.
Okay.
What was the premise of those ones?
That you have an organisation whose job it is to keep the various bookish realities and realities from bleeding into each other, that there is a library of all books, past, future, and imaginary.
Ooh.
And that if you are the right sort of person, or have the right sort of skills, you can step between books.
Huh.
And completely mess things up for those narratives.
Excellent.
Yeah. And Tuesday Next, the eponymous hero is an agent for this agency. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, as a question, since we've basically got almost the same idea, but approaching it from slightly different angles,
mm-hmm.
would you have a circumstance where the character... Would you have it where the PCs are characters in the book?
Ah. I think I would have them from different books.
Well, yeah, from different books.
Yeah.
But do their actions affect what is happening in the book?
Mm-hmm.
Or is... You know, is it a bit like wandering around backstage at a theatre or on a movie set? You know, there's the bit of the book which is visible to the reader,
mm-hmm.
and provided you stay out of shot, as it were, you're okay.
I think for hilarity's sake, I would have it that the book, the narrative, will continue insofar as it can. So
right.
If you are a character who is, for whatever reason, acting out of place with what's supposed to happen in that scene, the people who are interacting with you will just completely pay no attention
right.
to the differences you are making. On the other hand, if you're not there, they'll kind of walk up and kind of blank like they were supposed to be doing something and move on to the next scene.
Okay.
But if somebody else is standing where you should be, they will treat them as though it was you.
It's a little bit like Existenz.
A little bit, yeah.
Okay.
Interesting.
I mean...
Nah, he's looping. He'll keep doing that till you give the proper response.
An idea that I had that would be entertaining would be doing something like that for the book that they're in.
Uh-huh.
But have there be this rippling kind of shock effect that you could measure in the system for the structure of these books. It's not just the story. The characters are part of that structure because they have to be... You know, they have to have their own arcs. They have to have their movements so that they can make the decisions they do in order for the structure to happen the way that it does.
Mm.
If they're out there in other books becoming different people,
mm-hmm.
that's going to affect their originating books.
so that you could get these weird ripple effects happening where, you know, if characters from some books go out and they become different people, they go back to the original ones, there's this woof, and everything gets rewritten around who they are.
So if Sherlock Holmes falls out of his own native novels, spends a few subjective years learning crime scene investigation in the modern era, and then jinks sideways and picks up microtech that can take pictures and things, tools he wouldn't have been wouldn't have had available.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought of it that way, but yeah, you know, Holmes goes back to his own books and everything gets rewritten and the series is much, much shorter, and he put away Moriarty in after 5 years of Doyle writing.
I'm just imagining a
Breaking Back Fall never happens.
Yeah.
Watson, there's something I need you to do. Take these hairs, nip across to one of those CSI tie-in novels. I want you to talk to a man named Grissom. Tell him I sent the message, it'll be fine. Come back and relay what he said.
I was thinking more on a personal level sort of thing, of the whole scenario of, say, Mina Harker falls out of Dracula, winds up going on this quest to get home, on the way wanders through some various harsh realities, gets back into Dracula, and the story rewrites itself around the fact that she killed Dracula in Chapter 4, rescued Lucy, and the two of them started a supernatural detective agency.
I would read the shit out of that book.
And by the way, divorced Jonathan because he's wet.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, Mina Harker has had enough of this bullshit, kills Dracula, rescues Renfield, rescues Lucy, they start a detective agency, Renfield is the secretary, and off we go.
I like it.
And that could have ripple effects to other things based on Dracula.
Oh my.
So what variant of fate would you use for it?
Well, I was thinking that, I saw what you did there.
I am completely innocent.
No, you're not, because you're sitting there thinking I would totally use Quags.
Actually, for that one, I'm not sure I would.
Oh, really?
Well, to be honest, my total Quags GMing experience is very limited, but Fate does have that rather nice stress mechanics and the multiple different forms of stress mechanic.
That's true.
And I can see in that circumstance, if you've got somebody careening around in other books, that to a certain extent... Yeah, if I was doing it, I wouldn't be using something like Fate Accelerated. I'd probably be going with something from the Fate Core line, because essentially every time the character picks up skills or knowledge or experience that changes where they are in their own book, that's going to start putting pressure on their book. And so if you've got Mina Harker running around in, I'm trying to think of Dresden Files. You've got Mina Harker running around in Dresden Files and then comes back. She is going to be fantastically better able to deal with Dracula. And, you know, as she's picking up these various skills, that's putting more and more pressure on the plot of Dracula. So I can see it basically being, you know, everybody has a stress track that is the damage they are doing to their own book.
Actually, that's a very good point, because if the characters themselves upskill too much... then their book becomes a short story, becomes a pamphlet, becomes an idea that the author had once.
Or becomes part of the ongoing serial of... it could go either way, really.
Or becomes a background character in somebody else's book entirely, and they start to fade away.
I mean, the system that would be tempted to start for it with Fate would be Time Works from one of the Fate Worlds books, because that's about time travel. And how much you have to change in order to have changes to have materially relevant alterations to a timeline, with the idea that time has inertia. The kind of paradox that I see with this one is that the cool part is that these characters are changing. Then they go back to their own book and everything and things get weird. Except in order to undo that damage, it's kind of a story that suggests we want to undo that damage, which would mean taking the characters back to the way they were before, which is back to status quo, and it's kind of boring. So I'm not quite sure how to kind of resolve it, is what do you do with this as a game, because it's basically the Thursday Next Apocalypse of all of these books bleeding into each other, things having knock-on consequences, and all sorts of weird stuff happening. So it's kind of... The story is kind of interfering with itself, almost.
True. Although you could set it up so that if you specifically start with the players make characters from the five worst books they have read recently, so that over the course of the game you are making a much better novel out of The Lair of the White Worm. The Eye of Argon, even.
I don't know, there's some men you just can't reach.
but you get where I'm going with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of jumped sideways and started imagining, and I don't think this is gameable, but I started imagining various books and imagining that this is how the book ended up. The book that we have now is how the book ended up after this happened.
Oh, interesting.
Which makes me wonder whether, for example, the Caiaphas Cain novels started out with this bumbling, slightly daft, not very brave, not very anything commissar who is helped out along the way in very standard sort of Greek play style by his incredibly loyal and self-effacing assistant, Batman, Gunnar Jürgen. And then something happens.
And Gunnar Jürgen fell into a barbarian novel.
Or Caiaphas himself fell into a different novel, learned sword fighting, learned a bunch of stuff, came back, and now Jürgen is reduced to Gunnar Jürgen. Mm-hmm. Caiaphas Cain is this hero of the Imperium.
Whether he wants to be or not.
Indeed. Alternatively, riffing on the same theme, are the Caiaphas Cain novels quite literally what happens when Flashman falls out of one of his stories and winds up in a Warhammer 40k novel?
And never goes home.
Yeah.
Never. Ever. The Omnibi. I see them stretching out before me.
Yes. Yeah, wait a minute. You're telling me that these are novels published by an offshoot of a company that has its own stores? I'll never be out of print. I'll never have to look for a publisher again.
This could be the story. If you've got people who are minor characters who are never going to be much more than that, recruited to stop Biggles from jumping to a modern squilogy to prevent himself from going into the back catalogue and dying off.
Interesting.
Somebody who had a long and storied career and is starting to be a bit of a joke.
So basically what we're doing here is riffing very heavily on Wreck-It Ralph.
But because
we've just cast Biggles as Turbo, spoiler, and we're trying to stop him. Interesting. This screams one shot, doesn't it? It screams convention one shot.
If that's your specific storyline, then yes. If, on the other hand, you've got people from a vast variety of books attempting to find wild portals home, then that could be more of a campaign.
Yeah, the sliders thing.
I've thought of a way of making this a longer-term game.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, we have a scenario where someone fell out of a book, possibly even against their will or accidentally, and died.
Ooh.
And that had major consequences for the book they were supposed to be in.
Mm-hmm.
And on the stuff that that book then inspired. And so you've got characters from other books basically trying to figure out, what do we change? What can we add in? What can we shift in that original book to try to restore
the downline of the downline books?
Yes.
Or downstream, I suppose I should say.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of a definite chain of inspiration.
That is the hard part.
Okay, so I'm wondering now if you can pitch it that this is something that's already happened at least once, with things like The Big Sleep. So, The Big Sleep, the character comes in and is trying to... Your detective character comes in and is trying to solve one problem.
Mm-hmm.
Find this person. And every time he... every time he brings it up, everybody says, oh, you must be looking for such and such. Nobody's mentioned such and such till then.
Mm.
I forget the actual character's name. Or indeed any of the characters' names. I am a terrible person.
I'd never even heard of the book until now, so...
Oh, okay.
It's a good book.
Apparently. It's not that good.
I mean, an example off the top of my head that doesn't entirely fit in is playing Mary Hill with the story around the books as much as anything else,
mm-hmm.
is what would happen if Lord of the Rings,
mm-hmm.
Gandalf the Grey falls in Moria.
Uh-huh.
That is a known thing. Book one continues as normal. What happens if that was it? Gandalf never turns up again.
Oh, okay.
The books unfold as a thematic exploration of the despair and horror of World War One, and everything goes horribly wrong. It's all very grimdark. The end. And then Gandalf the White is someone else who's come in afterwards to try to say, we have to fix this.
We need to patch it up in order to rescue the rest of the fantasy genre here on. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's Gandalf the White, as played by someone else,
mm-hmm.
coming in at the point that Gandalf the White resurfaces, or are they coming in after the destruction of Middle-earth by Sauron's forces?
It's basically a do-over. They know what's going to happen if somebody doesn't do something.
Is the book we see that we know, is that the fixed version?
Yes.
So initially Gandalf the Grey would have had a bit of rumpus and joined back up with everybody else in Galadriel's Glade or something.
Yeah, something like that, except something went wrong. The fight with the Balrog punched a hole into another book. I don't know, he got lost and confused for a while and wound up in the Sword of Truth. And just kind of got stuck there. I don't know. There are so many Gandalf-derived characters that the idea that he got lost out there somewhere and is still trying to find his way home, meanwhile, shit got fucked up without him.
That makes sense.
Ah, yes, he got lost. Got stuck in a Forgotten Realms...
Yeah.
Forgotten Realms novel for a while, playing Elminster, but eventually managed to find his way out.
And in the meantime, all hell was breaking loose without him. So somebody else has come in and has tried to put things back on track. And they've been able to restore most of it, but not all of it.
Interesting. Okay.
Because the ending that we see in the books isn't necessarily the original ending, but it is one where the age of man survives. There
but
is
only
hope
the
left.
Age of man.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, this is where some people of my acquaintance who actually qualify as Tolkien scholars would start stabbing. Sorry, what?
Okay.
But
they would only be a little bit stabby.
No, I think they'd be pretty stabby.
They'd be very stabby.
Yeah. The idea that what we see is not Tolkien's original intent is stab, 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 stab.
Well, what we're pitching here is that there is no author, that these are worlds unfolding under their own pressure.
Mm.
And because of Gandalf getting lost, we never get to see the scene where an enormous catapult is built to attempt to just fling the hobbits using some sort of rudimentary parachute over onto the very foot of Mount Doom to speed the process up. We never see the process in which there is this air battle going on between the giant eagles and the flying ring wraiths who are trying to stop them from simply flying over and dropping the fucking ring in the volcano.
That one would have been awesome. Itchy eyeball. Anyway.
Instead we get the version where the eagles basically said, no, this book's completely screwed. We're not having anything to do with it. To hell with a lot of you.
Basically, yes.
Yeah, we're doing okay. And in which, it had taken so long that Denethor has basically just been hitting the bottle, as it were.
Oh, you think he was just too pissed to say his lines rather than had actually gone mad as a part of the...
Oh, I'm sure. Perhaps in the original he had not gone mad, but he's spent so long there just, well, there's no Gandalf. What are we going to do? Hey, look, there's a ball thing. Ooh, pretty. and so they try to repair it as best they can. Mm. That maybe in the original version, Denethor wasn't a completely useless idiot.
Mm.
Because frankly, if we go from the movies, referencing from the movies, they sort of tack on the whole, oh yeah, and Denethor is a colossal jackass thing very late in the piece, which strikes me as the whole thing of, okay, how do we explain him away? I know, we'll do a cutscene. We'll have somebody remembering, yes. I think we'll kick that.
Yeah.
Started with my idea and kind of merged with yours.
Yeah, I didn't really see any point in claiming my own space for that one because we got ended up in very much the same territory.
We did. Did Kev have an idea that was substantially different, or did we all end up with the same thing?
It's kind of a fragmentary, narrow angle on the same kind of idea.
Well, we've never done that before.
Of, what I was thinking of was, I was watching Leverage the other day, and it is a fun show. And it occurred to me that I haven't run into a heist film of that nature, or a heist story of that nature, where you've got very competent people who have a plan. They are capable of rolling with the punches and adapting to circumstance, and it all, and they're, you know, massive amounts of competence born. And then something happens that is a complete outside context problem for them. And so I was thinking of running basically the equivalent of a game like Leverage, where there's a slight bait and switch. What happens when a Leverage team winds up, or a heist film, that the characters in a heist film wind up stealing a Lovecraftian artifact?
Huh.
Interesting. Okay, so
they don't know what it is.
Do they trigger it, or?
Yep. Or just, you know, they have lifted it out of the protective circle in this grand heisty fashion, and then things start to go strange on them. What do they do?
Interesting. Okay.
You know, if we're going with the Leverage archetypes.
So, the mastermind, grifter, hacker.
Yeah.
Burglar, punchy dude.
Hitter, I think.
Yeah, that kind of framework. Well, you know, Ocean's 11 had some double ups because they needed people in more than one place. But if you've got this very competent team with very dedicated roles who have to start adapting on the fly because the rules are changing in ways they don't understand, but that they can figure out. That would be entertaining.
Yeah, that would be. I'm thinking for this specific game, you wouldn't need to have a very clear idea as a GM what the artifact does and what the consequences are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm kind of imagining a scene ripped quite blatantly from Vampire Hunter D: Bloodlust.
Mm-hmm.
Just they've gone in, they've grabbed this artifact. Yeah, possibly they've put it in a nice protective case so that it doesn't get damaged, and have completely missed the fact that there is this protective circle around it in the museum.
Mm-hmm.
And as they're leaving, there's a scene from, say, Vampire Hunter D, where as the vampire is travelling through town, the crosses on rooftops are bending, and there is actual physical effect occurring in the world as he passes. And I'm kind of imagining that kind of thing with this artifact, that as they're carrying it in the case, and maybe they're not aware of it at first, but as they, you know, as they wander along,
freezing, plants dying.
Yeah, plants are dying. Mirrors are cracking. And you know, as potentially, you know, if you wanted to do a game where you're forcing them to stay on the move, the longer it stays in one place, the bigger the area of effect gets.
That would be quite nice. I mean, something just occurred to me now would be that if we're going with a very specifically leveraged context, they're doing this to mess with a particular person. Someone wealthy, a collector of fine things, and they were going to swap it out and do a replacement or something, and it just goes off the rails. There's weird things happening, and for whatever reason, he knows instantly that the thing they've replaced it is a fake. Plan goes off the rails. Suddenly shifts. It's no longer just being throwing their weight around as this collector person is really dedicated to getting whatever it is back. And so basically you've got this leverage team that suddenly realizes that partway through, we're no longer in a heist film. We're in a preventing an eldritch ritual film, and we don't have all the cards.
Interesting. My brain has basically called the museum owner a Mr. Usher.
Yeah.
I don't know. In that circumstance, what counts as a win for your players?
I think it would be basically the win of a heist film would be vanishing into the winds, completely undetectable. The bad guy might have stories about people who did this fantastically elaborate thing that nobody will believe.
Yeah.
In this circumstance, the win is we figure out how to destroy the artifact, we keep it away from the bad guy for a long enough period of time through misdirection, confusion, or outright conflict that the stars are no longer right.
Okay.
Something along those lines. I mean, if we're thinking of it in terms of my mind has gone blank.
See, my brain has been placing this artifact as more like an elder sign or something that, if as long as it's in the circle, will not do anything. But once you take it out, things start happening on their own. So
yeah.
Is that something where either the mark needs to create another one, which might be bad for all concerned, or the players need to put the thing back, or create a different circle?
That's a good question. I was thinking of something where it was, if it, the moving of it was triggering something. It occurred to me that another angle on this, rather than the strictly Lovecraftian one, is if we run the leverage team through the lost room, of just, we have a circumstance where they nick something. And it just seems like it only matters to a particular person, or, you know, it's clearly valuable, but
it suddenly turns out that this thing is not what it looks like.
This thing is more than it seems. You've got weird cultists coming out of the woodwork. You've got the guy who you were supposed to be flummoxing who has been unflummoxed and seems to know where it is, but not precisely, who's now hunting you. It's all very, what the hell do we do now, Dave?
Why is everybody doing this over a pack of cards? Honestly.
Honestly, yes. And how are these people, how have these people infiltrated the FBI, of all things? We didn't see that one coming. Crumbs. That kind of thing.
Okay.
It wouldn't even necessarily have to be kind of the saving the world, preventing the ritual thing, but just some kind of supernatural spin that these people are completely out of context for. And so they have to figure out the nature of the new game as they play it.
Okay. Is it new enough game that you basically say, and you take the artifact, you get to the end of the street, and here's your new character sheets?
I kind of like the idea of doing it with the old character sheets.
Okay.
I had an analogy, but I've completely faded out on what it was. But yeah, if we're thinking the film Sneakers, say, They're infiltrating this facility, they're going to steal the artifact, everything else is going fine, and then it gets weirder and weirder, and you've got people who are kind of already partway through this infiltration, with their skills as infiltrators and hackers and things, doing, okay, how exactly do we handle this? And it's basically trying to solve a round peg, a round hole problem with a square peg as things start to unfold and get strange. Unfortunately, I don't have enough depth of detail for the concept to kind of be able to say, these are the ideas. So it is very general in terms of throwing around the ideas, which is...
No, we can work with this. Leverage goes to Nightwatch kind of territory.
Or that weird series of films about the librarian, and it was all very pulpy and...
Librarian search for the...
Do you mean librarian quest for the spear?
Yeah, or a better version of those ideas, Leverage meets Warehouse 13.
Nothing wrong with a librarian quest for the spear.
Yes, there was. Characterization would be my first thing on the list for what was wrong with that show.
I... grant you, there is some... they're not good films, but they're very entertaining.
Yeah, okay. I haven't seen the first one,
but I do want to see the other two.
Mm.
There was the bit with the jetpack.
There was the bit with the jetpack. And also, I don't think you do want to see the other two. That they do suffer from sequelitis.
Wow.
And from that start point, that is not saying anything good at all.
Actually, I thought of another example of the kind of analogy I was thinking of. The Fringe. What was the name of the character played by Leonard Nimoy?
William Bell.
Yeah. You've got William Bell. Really powerful technologist, has all sorts of companies and huge amounts of resources all over the place, also kind of a dick.
Yeah.
the leverage crew, identify him, do various things. Ha ha, he's got buildings all over the place. And Nick something from a research facility as part of the various leverage of things. And then everything focuses on it because it's some kind of emitter that is doing something exciting interdimensional.
Mm-hmm.
Except now it's no longer in the circumstance where it's controlled. He wants it back. You don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
And so you've got, with that as a game, with the whole Fringeverse thing, you've got people with very dedicated skill sets who might be winding up with people they've conned or come up against before, but who don't remember them or think they're dead.
Mm.
And you've got the whole multiverse bleed through happening as part of one consistent con. And if you wanted to do extra for experts, they have to figure out how to disentangle themselves from this so that they don't get blamed.
Very interesting. And make sure that they're in the correct universe at any given point.
Yes!
Or have the right... Actually, that is a situation where if there is a possibility of there being doubles,
mm-hmm.
that could be as much a positive as a negative.
Mm-hmm.
Just a thought.
Yeah, it's a good one. I mean, hell, the basic premise of a leverage team of hyper-competent individuals do a job as normal mm-hmm. and wind up in the wrong universe. That in itself would be an interesting story.
Yeah.
For a one-shot or a campaign, because they've got fantastic skills and background and grifting and what do you mean we don't know who the president is? Shit, fuck. So, yeah.
Yeah. And all their contacts are treating them very strangely.
Yes. And they're going to break into the facility. And what do you mean everyone uses key card chips embedded in their palms? So our lockpicks are useless. Oh, that would have been good to know 10 minutes ago. Yeah.
Yeah. But or even worse, you're in the process of breaking into a facility, and I'm already here. I'm looking at the back of my own head. Ah!
What do you mean I'm head of security? That's not good.
Maybe I'm really lazy.
Whoop, whoop.
Or then again.
Yeah. So basically, hypercompetence meets an outside context problem is kind of the umbrella. I didn't have much more specific than that. So this is probably going to be a really short episode.
Probably a little bit, yeah.
A little bit on the short side. Yeah.
Mm. We've done shorter, I think. Yeah, we have.
Okay. So that was two and a half ideas, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us, folks. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Next time on the Big Red Couch.
We have Apocalypse Engine from Just Dave and the Thursday Gamers from Montreal.
All right.
Apocalypse Engine.
Want to hear more of our shenanigans? Then go to hoarde.net and click on the button that looks like a couch. The Big Red Couch is released under Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 Unported from creativecommons.org. All music on the show comes from the album Universal Fluff Theory by Krakatoa. Visit them at krakatoa.com or follow the link from our page. See you next time!